You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means. And off we go once again. Welcome along to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby with me, Alex Payne. Hask is here and Ben is here. Hello, gents. How are you? Ben, first of all, are we speaking this week? Quite a lot at stake at the weekend. Is this entente cordiale or are we at loggerheads already?
Rugby is completely secondary today. You know what was today? Today was the schools opening back up. Today was better than the 14th of July in France. This was my absolute happiness. It was this, the high of my over the last couple of months. So my girls barely said goodbye to me. That's how much they love me, and just ran to school, and I was chuffed for them.
I have a dormant and very inactive following on social media, and I put out at 7:45 this morning, school run's done. Anyone free for a cocktail? And I think it's the most interactive tweet I've ever had in the history of my pitiful social media experience. So I'm drinking with you on that one. Hoffingtons, what news this week? How are you?
Oh, fighting fires all over the place. I actually didn't know that it was England-France this weekend. So when you say we're upset, good. I didn't know. But it's that International Women's Day, celebrating fantastic women all round. I'm very lucky. My wife is always looking after me. She's brought me Corona to the table. Obviously, other beers are available. And we're keen for a sponsor and some crisps. I don't have any kids, so I'm always permanently happy. Well, not any kids that I know about, but I was sponsored by Durex. So the answer is I don't have any.
Good. I'm glad we're setting off in normal style. I hope everyone's well, all our listeners and viewers. It's good to have you back this week as well. I hope you've all recovered from what was a really fun show last week with the awesome Dan Carter. We had a really, really good time with one of the greats. He says he's not the GOAT, but a lot of people feeding in that they think he possibly is. And the question that we've been mulling over this week is, how on earth do you follow a World Cup winning, former World Player of the Year, widely recognised as one of the greatest to ever play the game? It's a tricky question. We like to set the bar high, but the answer is that you book a World Cup winning, former World Player of the Year, widely recognised as one of the greatest to ever play the game. Woohoo! And then you give her own show. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the newest member of our mob, Emily Scarrett. How are you?
I'm really well. How are you? I saw that you had Dan Carter on last week and I was like, I cannot believe they booked me the week after. Totally, total setup.
We are always going up the mountain and you are the next rung on that ladder. It is very, very nice to welcome you. I'm not going to say to the good, the bad and the rugby because we're doing something a little bit different, which we'll come on to in a moment. But Hask has already called you up on your free stash. The two of you, I know, have worked together quite a lot. There's quite a lot of piling in going on. But would you like a quick right of reply? How is it to be bringing a bit of, I suppose, stardust to what is a very average collection of washed up former rugby players?
Yeah, I'm excited. Looking forward to it. The labels are on show. Hask knows all about it. We know how to play the game. Yeah, I mean, looking forward to it. Should be good.
Oh, but you're never out of it. That's the thing. I've never seen someone on brand as much as you. 24 hours a day, all the time, Adidas for life.
It's because I only have one sponsor, Hask. So I don't have all this like revolution of all these other ones that I can go through. I've just got the one. I'm happy, I'm loyal, and I'm sticking with it.
But you say that now. You're on the good, the bad, and the rugby train with the good, the bad, and the Scaz train, whatever it is called. I've forgotten it already. But the fact is, you're going to absolutely dominate it. You'll have more sponsors. I'll be coming to you for sponsors.
Good. That is the hope. We certainly aim to I was going to say teach, but that definitely isn't the case. But certainly there'll be hints and tips along the way from James on brand endorsements. And actually, as Hask mentioned there, we are not joking about the new show. So we're launching it this week together with our new friends at Allianz. It is The Good, The Scaz and The Rugby, which you winced at when we first launched it. But I think it's got a lovely ring to it. We're going to be doing it with the great friend of the show, Elmer Schmidt, who you had a bit of a chinwag with on Friday. Is that right?
Yeah, we just had a little WhatsApp FaceTime. It was a lot of fun. She was at home, obviously in South Africa, learning a little bit about her and where she's from and all that sort of stuff. Met a few of her cats. I did have to confess to her that I wasn't a cat person, I was a dog person, but the train still moves on. I know, we were fine with it. So yeah, that was good fun.
Elmer, obviously an absolutely brilliant journalist and a huge sort of advocate of not just sort of women in broadcasting, but women in sport as well. I'm fascinated to know, and funnily enough, it takes me back to a very, very long time ago when I said to Hask the first time we ever started doing this, what do you want the show to be? Have you had a think about what you want the good, the Scars and the Rugby to be. I still think that's a great name. You've got to come round to it sooner rather than later.
I wince because I just never imagined having my name in a show. Right. Especially when Hask hasn't even got his name in the show.
You don't think I didn't kick off about that? When I saw that you were getting a show, we've had board meeting after board meeting. There's been a debate. I'm known as the bad. I mean, how bad is that? I don't get name checked. It's only because, let me explain something to you, Scaz. It's because you are a world-class player and a lovely person, and the chances of you bringing the show into disrepute are pretty small. But the reason they just only name me the bad is if I fuck up, which is likely to happen, they'll just phase me out as if I was never there. And they'll place me with Ellis. They go, oh, he's bad as well. Or, you know, Ben, he's a crazy French bad man. It's written in the stars. You're very lucky, you know, because you deserve it, to be honest with you.
What would you like your show to be, other than a branding exercise to bring on, you know, more endorsements?
I think we're probably going to kind of feel it out a little bit as we go, but hopefully just chatting to some really cool people, hearing their stories, not analysing what happened at the breakdown at the weekend, that's for sure. That's kind of, Elmer and I were very clear that that's not what we want that to be about. It's not either of our interests. So get some cool people on, tell their stories, see what's going on in the rugby world and chat about that. And I guess, yeah, figure it out as we go. So suggestions, I suppose, welcome, because I am certainly very new to this, a little bit nervous before our first show, but also looking forward to it.
You'll be running the show before any of us know what's happened. I love the idea, because actually you mentioned some of the podcasts that are out there, some brilliant ones, like, you know, the Women's Rugby Pod and Try Hards. I think they do brilliant jobs in a very sort of specific niche of women's rugby. But I love the idea of you talking pressure with Zara Phillips, or preparation with Jessica Ennis Hill, or, you know, match day nerves with someone like Gabby Logan. And I think there's a really interesting, you know, you've been at the top of your game for such a long time, but I'm fascinated to sort of hear you cross referring, I suppose, notes across, you know, the top echelon of sport and pressure and that kind of thing. Is that something that interests you? Do you learn a lot from people like that as you go?
Yeah, massively. I think when you name some of those names, there's certainly people I don't have in my phone book, so we might need to borrow you there, Alex. But yeah, some of those names are huge, aren't they? The experiences that they've had, it's so kind of cross-transferable across sports. I did something the other day with some people from other sports, and it was just so interesting to hear their own experiences, trials and troubles that they have within their own sports, because they're different but very similar. Yeah, it's a really interesting space, I think. So yeah.
Who have you bounced off in the past?
I did a webinar the other day with Catherine Granger, Alex Hartley.
Was this the RPA?
Yes. And it's probably one of the first times that I've ever sat in a room with kind of people from other sports. Like we've had probably like talks from other sports before like big competitions, but it's never been like that really interactive, kind of relaxed environment where you can just chat, chew the fat a little bit. And like I said, just understand their own experiences, because everyone's is a little bit different. But fundamentally, being a woman in sport, you've probably been through a lot of the same stuff as well.
Yeah. Do you find yourself talking more in those situations, or listening more in those situations? Do you like to... there's quite a CV that you can turn to and a whole load of experiences that you can refer to. I'm just fascinated how that plays out.
I'm probably more naturally more of a listener. So I probably sit back, take it all in, process it a little bit. Probably not the immediate kind of comebacks. So that's why I'm interested to see how the show goes when I've not got a personality like Hask is. But yeah,
thank God.
Yeah, it was just really interesting, like just to hear, as I say, their experiences and stuff. And they all have a wealth of experience in their own right. So yeah, it was really cool.
Someone like Catherine Granger, who has moved from, you know, being a world beater into quite a big sort of leadership role now. I mean, I'm fascinated as to, you know, how people like that have not only, you know, achieved so much personally, but also just moved the dial in terms of women in sports. Do you take quite a lot from someone like that, who is just smashing through glass ceilings as she goes?
Yeah, big time. She spoke a lot about obviously her early experiences in rowing when she was a youngster and how, you know, tough that was in a sport like that. And then obviously where she is now, probably a lot of stuff she perhaps couldn't necessarily talk really open about, obviously within her role at UK Sport. But yeah, where she's started and where she's got to, I think that's also quite an interesting pathway for someone like me involved in a sport. Like obviously Maggie's been really vocal about wanting to be president of the RFU, stuff like that, which I don't think any of us really saw as a thing when we're like playing our sport. But actually there's something to go to. I think there's so many people in so many different sports that can make a real difference, because they've done it, they've lived it, they've been in the crux of it, And I think that experience actually helps when kind of planning back down.
I think what's really interesting is Ben will probably feel the same way, is that so much of my career, obviously, as the women's game has developed, obviously we've got to know more personalities. Like, you know, if you were to ask personalities of women's games, I would say, you know, Emily Scarrett, you know, Nolly Waterman, Rachel Burford, but those are kind of names that I would be able to recall on. But what I think would be fantastic with the show as well is to kind of lift the lid and break the barriers down so we actually get to meet people, you know, and imagine the same thing in the French side and see what makes people tick and the sacrifices. Because I also think, and actually International Women's Day is really key for this, is because, you know, if you have, as a young girl coming through sport, if you have role models and people that are, you aspire to be in the top of the path and you can see a clear path when you actually get to know them, it's really easy and aspirational. You know, I imagine, you know, I was talking to Nolly about it a few times that, you know, when she first started playing, who were the people that you looked up to? They weren't there. Now you are the generation of people to look up to. And I think it's amazing, especially a show that reveals the personalities, because I'll never forget the women's team did a video, I think I've quoted it before, where they said, what are your most commonly asked questions? And this was like 2 years ago in the game.
Scouts was in it. Scouts was in it.
Yeah. They were like, first of all, are you all lesbians? It was like, no. Do you actually tackle? They're like, no. Do you pull each other's hair? Like, no. What do you do about your boobs? And they're like, all these kind of, and this is the same stupid shit that people have, that you girls have to put up with. And I think that once they get that stupidity out of the way and they show the dedication to training, the intensity of training, and actually the personalities to hear that you have to make all these sacrifices that we're gonna come on to, but you also have to, you know, either have a job or you're not funded the same way, or you don't train as much, or you have to live a professional lifestyle on, you know, not the same income and stuff. And I think that's fascinating. Once you get those personalities and find who, you know, who's the funny one, who's the joker, who's the sensible one, I think it's amazing. I can't wait. I think it's going to be a massive show, and it's only going to do good things because, you know, every time I go to a dinner with one of the women's team, they go, you know, what's the difference between you and a woman, you know, the women in the particular room? They've won a World Cup. You've won fuck all. And I'm like, this is very true. You know, and you know, for example, who's still got a sponsor? Emily, who has to go buy their own stash? Me. It's the way it goes. I don't know, Ben, do you feel the same way about the French team? Do you know a lot about the French women over there?
Yeah, so I was just going to say, actually, I saw that video a couple of days ago, and I have to say what I loved about it is your reaction. As you guys, you were just laughing about it, right? There's nothing worse than if you're trying to grow a sport, and you've, in France especially, I mean, there's some beautiful crowds. I remember a stacked stadium in Grenoble. I personally went to see a France-England game that will not mention the final score, but in Marcel Michelin 18 months ago, and I was honestly blown away. So the quality now, I think, is... obviously, in international rugby is probably easier. The quality now is there. Everybody's aware. But like Has said, getting a dig into the personality is so important. So I don't want to add any extra pressure that you don't need. But it's so cool to know that top players will be able basically to open their hearts to other people. That's how we're going to basically get a feel of who they are. And during that video, with the stupidity of the questions, could have pissed you off, to be honest, because they're old and dated and should be chucked in the bin, but you just laughed about it, you giggle about it. I felt that I was part of your you know, the back of the bus of the team, and you were laughing about all those things, which are precisely the same stupid questions that we get asked with Hask and stuff. I mean, Stade Français, trust me, every time that I stepped into a different changing room, they would ask me some stupid ass questions. You didn't get offended, you just laugh about it. So, and I think that's brilliant. So sorry to add a bit of pressure, but we need to know about you.
I think that'd be really good as well, just like not having to do that first stages of like women's rugby, or you know, how far have you come, like how long you've been playing, all that sort of stuff, because I think that's, we're trying to get away from that because everybody's done that now. We know, like, people play, women play rugby, yeah, like who are you, what are you up to, how are things, da, 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 rather than that initial bit, because I think that's probably been pretty well done now.
I was just saying, I'm fascinated by the characters. You know, who in your change room is the kind of the brooding one that doesn't say a lot, that you know, that, you know, in rugby, we get, you know, this one prop spewing in the bin because, he, you know, they're too nervous. You know, who's the one, the shouter and screamer? Who's the, you know, who's your Joe Marler? But the one that's off the wall.
Marley Packer.
You know, like, what does it go back to your home life? You know, what's it like? I'm fascinated in the relationship because I can only equate it to one way, where I go off to a physical battle and I come back to my wife. Some of you go off to back to a physical battle and come back to your partner who does something completely different. What's it like coming back home with a black eye, with a boyfriend, and every time you go to the shops, everyone's going, you know what, mate? I think there's some fantastic things that are untapped and the required sacrifices, and the fact that, You know, is there a frustration that you win a World Cup, that you're consistently winning Grand Slams? You know, that I watched that game, England-France, which I'd obviously hadn't seen the women's game for a while, and I was like, England on fire. And then I don't know if Ben saw it, but it went right down to wire. I was in the stadium going, what the hell's going on here? Like, I've turned up here and they've got filled it. And then obviously you scored the winning try, last minute penalty. Yeah, last minute penalty. And that kind of level of intensity. But the level of contact, I was like, fucking hell, they are flying into each other. And I think that's fascinating how you prepare for that physical battle and all the psychology around it. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be one of those things that is ever developing, and I'm fascinated to see it.
I just want to add, and I know, no, don't do that. I just want to add, I think you've raised a really good point, actually, which is that women's rugby has arrived, and therefore we don't need to continue asking how far it's come, etc. But I do just want to ask you, I was very lucky, and I remember still one of the most favourite things I've ever covered was the 2010 Women's Rugby World Cup. And then, of course, in 2014, when, you managed to... That was a hell of a day. But the question I wanted to ask you is, in the 11 years since then, we always talk about how far it's come. I just wonder if we could sort of turn it around and go back to the interview where you're constantly being asked about, are you all lesbians? And, how do you tackle with boobs, etc. Have you genuinely noticed, as that tails off, the respect in rugby has grown? Do you get asked ridiculous questions like that, which probably were prevalent 11 years ago, far less now than you did then? Because in some ways, that's as interesting barometer as how far, the game has come itself.
Yeah, definitely get asked those questions a lot less. I think for me, it's a bit generational. So when you do get those questions, you can guarantee it's probably a bloke who's over 65. And that's pretty consistent. Look, I think it's not everybody knows about women's rugby. Not everyone knows about rugby. Like, some people in this country, just football. That's all they know. That's all they see. It's consumed on their social media. That's all they follow. And that's fine. So it's not, does everybody know about women's rugby? Has everyone seen it before? And I think we're not unrealistic and we're trying to like totally consume the whole nation with women's rugby, but it's just, continuing to spread that message. Haskell knows as much as anyone, football is a much bigger sport in this country than rugby is. That's just a fact. And so we're just trying to continue to make our way in that space, I suppose.
I'm fascinated what the women's rugby like in France. Is there a link? Because what's interesting about the game in the UK now,
it's enormous.
Is why I've seen it so much bigger. Is that, for example, when you used to drive into Harlequins, for example, you used to have your Mike Brown, your Chris Robshaw on the walls. Now, when you drive in, you had Rachel Burford and all. You had different members of their team, and obviously they were showing to be coexisting. And
Shauna Brown.
Most people have coexisted together, which I think is a really important step. Like, I think it's a national team with England. We didn't really have anything to do with the girls. After we played the game, I would stay out. Sometimes we were walking to the pitch and stop and watch and see what was going on. But we never did a training session. We never linked or we never did a walkthrough. I just wonder what it's like in France, in your respect.
Yeah, I'll never forget, Has, that the last 10 years of French rugby have been pretty shit. So basically they were trying to grab onto different sources of happiness. And women's rugby was definitely one of them. To be fair with the federation, they put a lot of effort into trying to not create, but put a decent platform, a respectable platform for the French team to actually perform. And like I mentioned, it's not rare to see 25,000 people go into a Six Nations women's game in France at all. They don't really do it in Paris because they're trying to promote rugby in different regions. But like I said to you, Stade Marcel Michelin in Clermont was absolutely jam-packed for England-France in the old years when you could have people in the stands. Grenoble, Stade des Alpes was absolutely jam-packed the same. Fantastic rugby was played. It was a real sort of a popular event about it. But don't forget, apart from England, because obviously there was a few hiccups during those confrontations, but France has beaten New Zealand. So it creates sort of an excitement. It creates something. Jesse Tremoulière, the fullback who now is back in ASM Féminine, is an extraordinary player. And it was funny because we used to go take the same planes. Clermont-Ferrand is a small town. There's probably one plane a week, to go to Paris. And you would, whenever there was a call up to Marcoussi, we would go up with her and she had the same stash as us and this and that. And that's how we actually became pretty friendly. I had no clue how good she was until I actually saw her play. But she is a hell of a kicker and just a hell of a player in general. Who, tell me if I'm wrong, but didn't she win like player of the decade a couple of months ago?
That's a hell of a statement. Yeah, we're just welcoming Emily in. We don't need to mention the fact that Jesse Tremoulière was named player of the decade and frankly was lucky to be named player of the decade. We'll get that
harsh.
Very quickly.
That's hard.
Outstanding talents across the board.
Does she have her own show?
No.
But in general, because Safi Ndiaye is another sort of enormous character. And hugely sort of a high-profile international rugby player. I wonder, Emily, whether you do you find yourselves not comparing notes on profile, etc., but do you find yourself, you know, talking with Kendra Coxage down in New Zealand and just discussing, I suppose, you know, making back pages, making front pages when you won the Rugby World Cup, you know, invites to big star-studded events, etc. Is that something that amongst the top echelon of the game where you sit and we're not used to dealing ourselves, that's a, it's a sort of talking point?
Yeah, not with the French, unfortunately, because my French is terrible. But yeah, it is. Like, obviously, I've got some decent friends around the world having played rugby with them. I think Sevens is a, has been a brilliant environment for that because you're together all of the time. You know, you get to know these people so on the kind of series and stuff. But yeah, people like Sarah Goss, Hirini Now, Kendra Coxedge, people like that. It's just interesting to hear their own experiences because you know what it's like in your country, you know what it's like for you. But actually, there are lots of differences. Some people have it better and some people have it way worse. So sometimes it actually does put things into perspective a little bit as well. But yeah, generally, those girls are all good crack. Obviously, the World Rugby Awards, I was out there as the only English and there was like four Kiwis. So I just was a kind of a, an honorary Kiwi for a few days. And it was, yeah, it was good fun.
I'm sure. Well, listen, we are really excited about The Good, the Scars and the Rugby. It's going to be out later this week, I think, on our YouTube channel. It's going to be all bells and whistles. I'm so glad that it's your show to do what you want to do with. It's much better that you can go wherever you want instead of us trying to sort of, I know, ours is such a shambles, frankly. It would not do anybody any justice to have you on board. So we are very excited about a new and far more impressive show on our channels, but I hope everyone will tune in and I hope there'll be a lot of support. And I'm really looking forward to seeing where you take it. It's going to be a lot of fun. There are some quite interesting headlines, which I would love to just sort of touch on with you. Firstly, with the news of the postponement of the Women's World Cup until 2022 because of insurmountable challenges. And it's not just the Women's Rugby World Cup. It's also the Under-20s Championship that's been postponed as well because of COVID-19. Is this a bit of a bolt from the blue? Were you expecting it? Is it hugely damaging or is it exactly the right decision?
Depending on who you ask, it's a little bit of a combination of all of them. I think for me, I wasn't expecting it. I think I thought if it was going to get called off, it probably would have been so right before now, kind of Christmas time or something. So I think it was definitely a shock. I think it came pretty quickly to everybody and the news traveled pretty fast. Yeah, I think I'm disappointed. I think, you know, you gear up for it, don't you? You work towards something, that's your goal, you set your sights on it, everything's planned around it. I suppose a little bit like the Olympics last year for so many athletes, you have that as your goal. But I think it's hard. I think so many people are in different states of mind with it. Obviously, you've got a lot of people that planned on retiring after it. So they were looking at life after rugby, what that looked like for them. You've got some of the youngsters who water off a duck's back, literally doesn't matter. You've got players who are injured who probably wouldn't have made the World Cup that now have got this revived sense of the target of a World Cup again because it's realistic for them. And then you've got the kind of the people in the middle. So I think I'm disappointed. Like Kendra sent me a message the other day, just like gutted, like hope you guys are doing okay type thing. Obviously they were meant to host it, huge, well they still will host it, but obviously it's meant to be a huge thing over there, massive rugby nation, super excited for it. But it goes on hold for a year. And I think it's the right decision because if I think if any of us went there, someone got a case or your training was affected or something like that, you'd be devastated. It's a once in a 4-year opportunity. For some people, once in a lifetime opportunity, you don't want to look back on and think, oh yeah, but what if that hadn't have happened? Or by training and working hard as you can, you're trying to eliminate as many of those what ifs as possible. And I suppose that one is something that's out of your control. So I think generally disappointed, but got another year to try and get better, bigger, stronger, faster, all of those things at 31. I don't know how possible that is, but we'll try.
You'll be good for it, I'm sure. I mean, I just wonder, because one of the things that I did read was that if it was a Men's World Cup, it would have gone ahead. And I just wonder whether you feel, you know, frustrated if that was the case, or whether you understand, and I presume they would have had crowds, but that would have been a concern, or perhaps not capacity crowds, whatever it might be, or whether you fall down on the side that actually, you know, there's been so much growth in the noise and the colour and the razzmatazz around. I mean, I remember doing 2010 at Guildford Sports Park, and then, you know, last year, oh, where was it, 20, do you remember that?
It was massive.
It was huge. I mean, it was a hell of an event at that stage. But if you were to go back to Guildford Sports Park now, you'd be stepping down 3, 4, 5 rungs. And that, I suppose, is the exciting thing about the game. I just wonder whether you feel yes, of course, if it was the men's, it might have gone ahead, and therefore that is a sort of a crunch point, or whether you think actually full houses are a necessity around the tournament because of the trajectory it's been on in the last 11, 12 years.
I think full houses would be amazing. I think you go to somewhere like New Zealand and you, I suppose, you expect that fan base, you expect the support. And admittedly, it's not going to be the most fun for English people when they're all wearing black. But I think you definitely expect that. You go to France, you expect full stadiums. And that's part of the reason it's one of my utmost favourite places to go and play, because that crowd is amazing. It's hard for me to comment on whether it would have gone ahead if it was a man and what that looks like and stuff. Like, I understand both sides of the coin, can look at it from kind of a well-rounded point of view. I think ultimately I've heard lots of people saying it gives New Zealand another year to give it even more hype, to give it even more, you know, airtime and stuff to make sure that those stadiums are full and everyone's right behind it when we get there. And I guess this way, hopefully it means that some people can travel and watch as well, so that not all the fans are wearing black.
So true. We were penciling in a little trip, actually, and hopefully that does mean we can come down and cheer from the sidelines. I suppose the other thing is it probably gives you a month of your life back as well, because you'd probably have had to do, what, 2 weeks quarantine before and probably 2 weeks off the back of it as well. A lovely little hotel in Gatwick. But hopefully you won't need to do that anymore, which is a good thing. Yeah. Have you heard from Simon Middleton? Have you done like a team Zoom and this is what we're hearing and this is the plan, or you just found out in the papers like everyone?
No, so we were in camp last week when it broke. So we literally finished training on the Tuesday. We were just there Tuesday, Wednesday at Penny Hill, finished the training on a Tuesday, and then got the message that night saying, look, guys, this is what's happening. And then it all, obviously, all hell broke loose on Twitter. Then we had a meeting the following morning, on Wednesday morning. Yeah, it was what it was. I think World Rugby proposed it. I mean, how World Rugby proposed it, I'm not sure, without it being the final decision. But that, I was a bit confused by that. But yeah, it's done and dusted. Mids was very much on the train of, you know, we've still got a Six Nations, which is only a few weeks away now, and look towards that. We're preparing for that. I think for me, I needed to take a couple of days just to not think about Six Nations, actually process what was happening, take a bit of time out. I think you can allow yourself that. And now, yeah, we're back on the train this week.
Brilliant. Nothing like your own podcast to land on your doorstep just to help you get over it. That'll move it on quickly. Ben, what's the reaction been like in France? Because, you know, at the moment in the Northern Hemisphere, it is England and France, and that's not a secret, really. I just wonder, you know, where the women's team have netted out in France with the high hopes, etc.
Yes, same type of reaction of just initial heartbreak of not having this wonderful competition that was starting to get a lot of traction, on top of the fact that it was going to be one of the first major sort of post-pandemic, you know, sporting event. So everybody was super looking forward to it, with the French team that's currently going through a lot of changes, but a lot of improvements also, and with the new generation coming through. So there was a lot of excitement. I think you just have to praise for the fact that the what Emily said, imagine that you're trying to see the glass half full or half empty. Imagine the heartbreak there would have been for such an important event if, for some whatever reason, there was an outbreak. Then what do you do? Look, typically what happened with the bubble gate, the waffle gate, whatever you want to call it, whether the senior French team, what do you do in the World Cup? How frustrating would it have been to such an event that people were, you know, trained for years, to just to be postponed, cancelled, you lose for some whatever reason. Look at the shambles that was Japan for one tornado, so, or a hurricane. So it could have been the same thing. So I just think it's a heartbreak, yes. In the grand scheme of things, they just try to see the glass half full and say that in a year's time, it'll be even bigger.
It will be mega when it happens. We are very much looking forward to that. And there'll be a lot more of that, obviously, on the Good, the Scouts and the Rugby. Just very quickly, the other thing I wanted to ask you, it's not growing on you. Every time I say it, you like wince and splutter.
It was funny on that production meeting, wasn't it, when they said it, and they're like, oh, how do you, every time you say it, every time they said it, it looks like you're smiling. And I was like, I don't know if it's smiling or whether I'm like a bit like that kind of with your teeth out.
We've committed it to print, so there's no going back now. Or maybe we can change it for week two, I don't know. The other thing I did want to ask you about is there was a really good story from Alex Lowe of The Times reporting, we record on Monday morning, the British and Irish Lions are set to undertake a feasibility study with a view to launching a women's Lions team, which I imagine is mega exciting, isn't it? That is a genuine smile. That's not a wince.
That's just a genuine smile, yeah. I think, like, I've grown up playing rugby, watching rugby, loving rugby. I think the Lions is, like, the pinnacle of that. Obviously, it's never something that we've been able to aim for, but I think, like, we were lucky enough to be in New Zealand 2017 when the Lions were there, stayed in hotels just across the street. We saw how consumed the nation was with it all, and that was in New Zealand. Obviously, back home, you know, the UK goes mad as well. So yeah, like bucket list type stuff, but probably bucket list type stuff that I never thought it was on that kind of asterisk bucket list that was probably never actually going to be attainable. But yeah, that would be unreal. They need to get it going though, because I'm not getting any younger.
Right. If you're listening, British and Irish Lions, get on with it. I know that Ben Calverley, actually, who's the chief exec there, has been really, this has been a personal passion project of his. And I think once you start feasibility studies like this, there's normally, hopefully, a very positive outcome. Again, some quite interesting points of, not conjecture, but certainly debate as to whether British and Irish is the right thing, or whether North against South in terms of hemispheres, or obviously France, Ben, throw your hands
up. It's about time you say it. Come on, you talk about a heartbreak, you talk about a bucket list. Well, to talk about your little friends, you know, from just across that little river who are desperate to be part of that, you know, the grown-up sort of playtime, and we're never invited. So I think it's about time, and I know it's, I don't want to rub your face in it, but let's face it, the best player of the decade is French. So she also maybe deserves a shot for the first line.
Please, will you go a little more gently on Scouts on show one? Stop rubbing it in.
You asked me before the show if we ever meant it. We did, because we did some BT work in Northampton, and she was very complimentary about Jessie. She said that she was very pleased for her more than anything. So that's why.
Said through that wincing smile that we're getting to know quite well.
Give yourself a Chinese burn, bite, fingers crossed. Yeah, she's great.
I love it. But in all seriousness, British and Irish only, Skaz Hiwa, you have to nail your colours to the mast, or would you love a British and Irish plus French and possibly an Italian or two? Would you do Six Nations against Sanzar, or would you keep it the purity of the Lions as we know it?
I think it's hard. I think you have to make it its own, because the rugby landscape isn't the same as the men, so you couldn't do a British and Irish tour of South Africa, for example, because it wouldn't work. Obviously, the South African women's team, Lynn Camel's just going there. She is going to turn that place around, I'm sure, but at the moment it wouldn't be the competitive scene that it needs to be for something that big. So it definitely needs to find its own route and figure itself out. What that looks like, I've no idea. We spoke earlier a little bit about the language barrier, and I don't know where that would fit in. Brought the French and a British and Irish side together, that could, like, don't get me wrong, I'm all for upskilling, I'd love to learn French, but in the scope of rugby, I don't know how that would work. That's probably something that would be quite interesting. Well,
I've seen some videos. There's some guys in the Lions store, they don't speak a word of English, I'm telling you. a word.
I played in France for 2 years. As long as there's a Benjamin Kaiser lurking around. Listen, I played in Japan. I learned to count to 10 and pass, and that was it.
Did you learn to pass?
No, I didn't learn to pass. I asked them to pass the ball.
Oh, right. So you got you right. Yes, got
right
you. Sorry.
Left door. But that's
right.
I'll throw my two penny worth in. I'm always fascinated because obviously the British Lions is amazing. From a men's perspective, just going off piece for a second, I'd love to have seen, you know, a combined team of kind of, you know, the Northern Hemisphere with the French players. There's Cid Paris, say, and some of the French stars in conjunction with some of the best in the... I mean, I definitely wouldn't have made that squad. Like, I barely made the Lions. If it was that, I would have been even further down the list. But it would be great to see that. And I think, I think it's interesting what Scarra said. I'll let her finish her answer. But I think you've got to adapt to the landscape. And obviously, I know there's lots of traditionists, but you can't have a tradition to something that never existed before. If you're making it, maybe you make it from the ground up and put those people in. But it's amazing rugby. The language barrier, after a few drinks, it doesn't even matter. you'll find out that a lot more people speak English, and the drunker they get, the more English they get. I had a Japanese guy on my team, couldn't speak a word of Japanese. After a few shochus, he was fluent in English. So I don't know where he got it from. But it was, it's an amazing level of rugby.
It was a useful tool not to talk to you, which he forgot when he'd gone too hard at the sake. You were in the middle of an answer, Skaz, which I'm afraid you'll have to get used to. Hask, when he wants to come in, comes in. But what was the answer?
He's not coming on our pod.
Right, so just be knocking at the door. Go away.
Oi, the best thing is it went from she wasn't sure about the title to her pod now. It's amazing.
That's an hour. Our pod.
Well, amazing how you bring out the best in others, Hask. You really do help with self-identity. Emily, your answer, please. British Irish Lions only, or Northern Hemisphere against Southern Hemisphere?
I don't know. And I appreciate that's fully sitting on the fence and it's boring, but I would love to see it. I'm a traditionalist, but I fully appreciate that I don't think the traditional method of the Lions would work in the women's case. It wouldn't. I think it would be awesome. I think it would be so much fun. I'm fully on board with whatever people come up with. and I will be there with absolute bells on if people want me. But I don't know. I think, yeah, people need to sit down and have some conversations, try and figure it out. I think obviously going to New Zealand would be the obvious one. That would be awesome. Maybe going to like North America, that would be an awesome one. But what team and how that's made up, I'm not sure. I would love to play with some of the French players, to be honest with you. I think the way the French play and the way they go about their business is always something that's intrigued me. So that I think being around some of those players would be amazing. So yeah, I'm down for whatever they come up with, as long as we make it happen.
Splinters, Emily, splinters. Very good. I tell you what, the media handbook on the Red Roses side, I think, is just as thick as it is on the men's side. Yeah. Very good. We'll take out of that, I think, that let's make it happen in whatever capacity we can. Shall we talk a little bit about the Six Nations that we have got going on at the moment? Because it is, I'm not going to say La Crunch, but it is the big one this weekend for those who like their cross-channel affairs. A little bit of an update on what's been happening over in France at the moment. Because when we spoke, Ben, what was it, 2 weeks ago or so, we were trumpeting and we were celebrating and we were marvelling at the renaissance of French rugby. And since then, I mean, it sort of looks like the whole house of cards is coming tumbling down again. Are we still standing over there or is it wobbling?
We are completely standing, and to be honest, the boys are back. So I don't know if you saw the squad announcement, but everybody's back. But in the meantime, I think there's going to be a few wounds, basically a few open wounds that are not gone yet. So basically what happened is that there's a lot of communication in the whole bubbles that need to be created, and sanitary bubbles. So there's a communication of thoroughness and 100% tightness of everything. And then you realize after the big scandal that it was, boys went to eat some waffles in Italy, I think it was in Rome, and the head coach went to see his son play on a Sunday afternoon after the Italy game back in Paris. And you realize that was part of the protocol. As long as they were wearing masks, as long as they were outside, as long as they got tested to come back in. If you contrast that with Josh Adams, I think it was, who basically had a little party at his house to announce the sex of his future child, and he didn't get picked for 3 or 4 weeks, it's complicated to say that to the press, right? So there's a lot of impact on the weight of the words and all the old, the old ghosts, the French this, the French that, they're not thorough. Well, they were respecting the rules, okay? France is not in lockdown at the moment. So you also have to, to put things back, everything into perspective. People are living, not normally, there's a lot of restrictions, but still there's no lockdown at the moment. So that's irrespectively of what happened. The protocol was actually respected. There was a report asked from the Minister of Sports to Bernard Laporte. So a typical French manner, the person who could have committed the mistake was the one who had to write the report. So that was perfect, And the COVID manager is the vice president of the federation, Serge Chimon, his number two, his best mate from ever. So a report was written up, at least, and then they realized that basically there was no clear fraud, but the minister said, and actually the prime minister was next to, or the minister of health, sorry, and was next to the minister of sport, who received that report and said, listen, from now, it's going to be airtight. So there's no more under-20s that are coming in, there's no more sevens players that are coming in to do the training squad during the week. There's obviously no more players leaving to go back playing for their clubs on Thursday and coming back. So there's a bit more thoroughness. But in the meantime, if the France-Scotland game is postponed, which is will be apparently the week after the final round, everybody's back now for this weekend. Yes, maybe a little bit of conditioning that is missed out, but Romain Tamac is back. Jérémy Vakatawa is back. Antoine Dupont is back. So if that was basically what we needed to get everybody back and to play the biggest trick that was ever played, then I don't know. But there's going to be a hell of a game on Saturday with a full French squad. My only issue is, like I said, the open wound. I feel that's basically what Fabien Galthié allowed himself to do did not go well with the players.
That was the question I was going to ask you. All a big misunderstanding, or have they got away with it?
Neither, really. It's not a misunderstanding. It's just it was part of the protocol. So if he was within the protocol, then how come none of the players were told that they were allowed to do it? That's the whole thing. They didn't lie. They just said half the truth. So basically the players are pissed off because obviously the more you multiply those type of initiatives, the higher the risk of contamination is. So it was a bit of a selfish way of saying, well, listen, I'll just take the rule only for me. And that's why I'm telling you the wound is a little bit open. I know there has been some proper
some proper disagreements. But listen, there's not a day that goes by without a proper disagreement in French, huh? in French team and in France in general. That just means that you're in good mood in the morning. So that's the way it is. If anything, like I said to you a million times, and Haskell know, some pissed offness will be the best fuel that a French team needs for the Saturday.
Great. 2007, the last time France won. Was that Dimitri Yashvili with the kicking tee? Was it that year that he bought it in the club shop and then kicked England?
I think that's 2005. That's 2005.
Was that 2005,
when he did
was it?
That. And in 2007, it's a different one.
Okay. Good knowledge. Outnors, I like it. You can come again. But that is a long old stretch, actually. I mean, we're not quite 1983 in Scotland, but they've obviously ended their hoodoo. Is there a sense with France that the time is now, and that if they are going to be the team that rips into 2023 as a proper front gunner, they need to start winning games like this on the road? Or is there a sense that we're building, it's coming together, there are bits of brilliance, but we don't mind the old slip up?
100% it's now or never. And never forget that there's a lot more in the scales and as a consequence than just winning or losing a game. There's a lot more than just the press being happy or being unhappy. There's the clubs who are going to be mega angry if all those concessions and basically the fact that they're playing ball with the federation doesn't get a reward at some point. Look, the perfect example is that Toulon are properly struggling for the last 3-4 weeks. They've really struggled. They just won, I think, the previous weekend, but they lost twice at home. But they have Baptiste Serin, number 9, Louis Carbonel, number 10. And all their other number 10s are injured. So they were playing under some serious, basically, man down. And so basically when the whole France-Scotland game was going to be postponed that sixth round, everybody was happy because the Premiership, there's no relegation. It's not Champions Cup, but there is top 14. And Toulon said, no. You're not taking again two of our best players, you know, and putting us in the shits. So definitely the sense is things are better, but now we need to win. Things were fantastic in 2020. Okay, but we still lost because a guy lost the plot and punched the dude, Mohamed Amas, in Scotland. And because Antoine Dupont, again, lost the plot, 78th minute, kicked it out. He thought the game was over for the opening game. So it's definitely a sense of those concessions will only last if there's victory. And victory is what Fabien Galthié and Raphaël Ibanez said when they took the job. They said, we're going to bring titles and fast. So a title needs to come fast to basically make it sustainable, make sure that it holds until 2023.
Some really good points in there. And I was doing my very best to listen and pay attention. But all I could see was Haas getting a proper going over by Burns.
Sorry.
Good dog, all right, Hoff.
No, so obviously, because you've had him now for a while, he nudges open the door. And then if you don't talk to him, the whole time he leaned down, he's come back in there. He's let himself back in. and he's rolled straight in. He attacks me. And the thing is, he gets so arsy if you don't pay him any attention. My wife gets the same. The dog gets the same. You know, that's the problem. But he's a law unto himself. So I apologise. I'm trying to be professional in here. But I think you made some very sensible. But in conclusion, it's now or never. The clubs will be upset if they don't. Fabien Galthié's promised a trophy. The French have got to do it. There we are.
There you go.
Good. Welcome to the Good, the Bad and the Rugby, sponsored by Bonio, which frankly is about as good as where we can pitch ourselves right now. So on that, Hoff, am I all right to bring you in, or are you still having your knee drilled? There was a really good article with Jamie George this week that he came out and he said he felt as good off the back of the Wales defeat as he did in terms of how England are trying to play as he did off the back of that All Black game. And we obviously stepped away from all things Wales, England last week, and some people got it and some people didn't. But I'm just interested now, we can sort of reflect on that, hopefully with everyone having taken a bit of a deep breath. Positives first, and actually, Emily, you and Haas can pick up on this. Did you see enough from England in Wales to suggest that England's attack is beginning to start bubbling again?
Look, I think it was a better display. I thought, the bits they put in place against Italy were, there were the positives. I think that, there's so many criticisms that Gabe was sort of labelled against the England team. Like, for example, they kicked too much. Then we discovered that Scotland kicked more than they did, obviously, in probably a better way. I think, look, there are positives there. I just think that England, unfortunately, going through a dip, that, it's not the first time that they've had this. I think there's obviously a lot of pressure from the outside for people to change things. And I think it's hard as a coach because you've got to stay to your convictions. You know, if a coach listens to the, I've had England coaches, give an example, who tried to put in a game plan that didn't suit the players. And everyone was saying that this is the game plan. And then because pressure came on, we lost a few games. They then tried to change the way they did things. They went from a wide, wide game to a sort of a Warren Gatland style round the corner game. And, you know, that's what they should have done in the first place. But he didn't know how to coach that because it wasn't part of his DNA. And I think Eddie, with his, you know, his selections, obviously there's a lot of pressure on where Sam Simmons isn't in there, why other people aren't in there. I think they're heading for some positives, but I think it's hard because that Wales game was pretty tough. I know for those moments it can be unsettling, but honestly, you know, you take those two moments out of it, that, you know, Wales pretty convincing towards that second half of the game. So I can understand what he's talking about, and you've got to be positive because as a professional sportsman, you only have the next day. Where that changes is when you go into a final where there is no tomorrow. But actually, you know, some of those guys, whether they are in it or not, you're afforded another opportunity to go again. And I can promise you that they would have been training and practicing to play that the game that we want them to play, but they haven't translated it onto the field. And I don't know whether that's because players in the position are not executing. And I don't question the game plan. I just question the execution. And I think that, you know, against France, it's going to be another tougher challenge. But what, you know, just as... You know, what Ben has said about sharpening the mind of the cracks and kind of stuff. If you can emotionally put that, park that, to understand that you're unified in the challenge. Same thing with an England team. What's better than going against the best? To focus the mind, to go, do you know what? You know, if this doesn't go well, we're going to get hammered. If we beat France, everything else is forgiven. And I think, you know, that paves over a lot of kind of mistakes and errors. So I think it'll be, you know, an incentive. Remember now, these guys would have played three games. So the idea that Saracen's boys aren't fit kind of falls by the wayside now. So, yeah, I think there were positives, but it wasn't, you know, I can understand why you'd come out the game and say that you felt good, because obviously the guys behind closed doors are on a path to change stuff. But, you know, that's got to lead to results. Otherwise, I think people keep chipping away at it.
Why are you smiling, Ben?
Because honestly, you would have ended that quote and put Thierry Dussoutoir 2012. And that was him trying to explain the inexplicable. You can't understand how this makes me happy, because you're trying to explain basically and find some positives into losing to Wales, conceding 14 penalties, losing to Scotland at home and not performing. And then Hask said, but if we beat France, everything else will be forgiven. And that's precisely the situation that France was in for the last couple of years, where they play like this and always trying to find a little bit of positive into something. But if you beat France, everything was forgiven. It's the reality. I don't see England going anywhere. Hask, you weren't here last time
was on,
but I called that game, and I did not expect Pascal Garzer to be wearing a red Wales jersey on. I didn't expect that one, but still, don't get me wrong. If they click, if they start performing well, they are a heck of a team. Of course they are. 2019 semi-final, the All Blacks, I was blown away. Since that week, I don't think they've gone anywhere. And I think at the moment, they're trying to find excuses, find some positives into something. It's just not the case. But where you're right is that if do they click and if they deliver against France, which is a heck of a challenge, but they will be at home and they know those how to handle those situations, then everything will be forgiven.
Was really enjoying having Ben for the first two. Now that he's lacerating Eddie at every comment and pulling apart English rugby, I'm sort of revisiting it. I just want to bring Skaz in because I want to know. I mean, your career has been littered with trophies and glory, etc. But I just wonder, have you had a period, a bit like England are going through at the moment, where just everything you do, the gears are crunching? And if you have, do you find you have to sort of, it's almost like riding the rapids, do you have to relax and just let the process come back, or do you have to fight your way out of it to get back to doing what you should be doing best?
Definitely had periods like that, 100%. I think part of the problem sometimes is different people do it differently. And obviously you're in a team sport. So some people will, like you say, want to fight their way out of it, be really kind of stubborn about it. No, everything's fine. And some people will just want to reset, take the pressure off themselves, that whole pressure's on them, doesn't matter, just go and see what happens, swing the bat. But they're all really hard things to pull together into one team. I think it's really difficult. Like, I think
Which one are you? Are you a swing the bat or are you a fight your way out of it?
I'm a swing the bat.
You surprise me.
Yeah.
What are we doing? Where are we going?
Yeah, sorry. Generally more chilled. I think, look, you have to take the pressure off yourself somehow because everybody else is trying to put it on. I think that's really important. These boys are playing for England. They're under the spotlight. They've lost two massive games in what is a huge tournament. They are fully aware of the pressure that's on themselves. Yeah, it's really difficult. I think one of my frustrations is the players aren't doing what they're really good at. So you've got some unbelievable players, especially in that back line, and they're not able to go and show what they're really good at. And no one, trust me, no one would be more frustrated than them about that fact. And I think that's something that we, you know, it's really easy to sit here and be like, oh, England aren't playing very well. Da, da, da. They're not trying to do that. You know, they're trying, like Hass said, they'll have done all the right things on the training paddock. And for whatever reason, it just isn't translating. I've no doubt it will come together at some point, whether it's this weekend or not, I'm not sure. But I think they've got to just swing the bat a little bit for me. They've got to take the shackles off themselves, go out there and play, because there are some unbelievable players within that side that can produce some unbelievable things.
What I would like to say, and because there's two hats on here, right? There's the hat of you asked me a direct question. You know, the listeners want to have something to hang their hat on. If you ask me, myself, what I would do, the very fact is that if ever in your career you will come off a game and you have to say things like, yeah, we had a good game, but the thing is that the referee and, you know, I would have made that tackle, but the guy, and, you know, and things we were training this week, but I wasn't feeling very well. If you fucking got any excuse about anything, you're already on a hiding to nothing. You're already making excuses. If you ain't winning, you won't anywhere. That's the fact of it. And yes, we like plucky losers and we like performance. But at the end of the day, you're still trying to polish a turd. Like you're trying to say stuff that is, you know, trying to fill in the gaps and make excuses. The fact of the matter is they're not going well. The reason I give the answer I give is because if I knew of an overview of the structure of stuff and you thought to myself, right, were they, for example, overtraining? The answer would probably be like, no. Do they have a game plan? Yes. Are they trying to implement it? Yes. Are they trying to put it in a training plan? Yes. Do we know the players in that game plan are capable of executing? Yes. Do you think Eddie Jones has become a bad coach overnight and suddenly forgot how to coach people? No. Has he changed the support staff? No. All these little pieces are no. And it is the intangibles, as Ben said, because you can't, unless there is a big thing to dramatically change. And the only thing that is being leveled is a change of selection. But remember, yes, a change of selection can inspire a team, but we are still a team game. And throwing one player in there might not change it. If you put a wholesale change in there, some of these players aren't used to international rugby, and that has a great deal of sort of stuff to talk about, really. So I honestly think if you ever asked me and went into media, I'd just say that wasn't good enough. You know, because if I have to justify my position, justify and try and scrape at the bottom of the barrel to pull out a few gems of like, well, penalty count was better, or, well, at least, you know, I didn't run into the post today. We're sort of kind of scrabbling around talking shit. The fact is, they're not good enough. They're not playing well enough. But as Emily simply said, and as Ben made that point, you have to find the positive to keep the wolf from the door, which is the media element, which is the fan element, which is your self-talk and your own mental thing to go, do you know what? If we went around self-loathing going, we're a load of shit, you wouldn't get anywhere. And you have to ask, are they doing everything they can do? Yes. Is this the place they've been to before? Yes. You know, is selection, I can't comment because I don't know what's in Eddie Jones's head. But I think we are in it. We're in a bad spot. Does it look like, you know, you're going to do a U-turn? We're a bit like an oil tanker. Can you turn an oil tanker on a sixpence and suddenly, you know, produce a well-being performance? Well, ordinarily, no. Can this England team do it? Yes. Are there too many moving parts to make it click overnight? I don't know. But there's certainly enough moving parts for us to do better. But that's my truth of the matter. What I'd actually say if you asked me, I'd be like, no, it's shit, let's move on. I've got no magic wand to make it better.
I can't wait to hear the stories, Emily, of when you go back into the England camp and the PR and press person just takes you to one side and says, look, you know, you are front and centre, but please don't use the expressions polish a turd, it's shit, let's move on. Just remember the fact that we are growing the game and we're trying to have a bit of a reputation around us. I can only apologise. We're going to have to sort of redact these bits from your memory. It's going to be like the Men in Black, look into the light and just press the button and you can go back to being what you do best. Have you spoken to anyone in the England team? Have you sent a few little e-cuddles?
I spoke to a couple of guys, and I think, you know, the problem with professional sport is it's inescapable. So, you know, if somebody shouts at the top of their voice, I don't care what people say, they more often care than anybody else. If they say they haven't heard about stuff, you've heard, because there'll be a helpful relative or drop in the fact that so-and-so's giving you 2 out of 10. You'll know that you're under pressure and everything else. The beauty is when you're in a closed confines, you're working together on a sole goal, and everyone around you is in that sole goal. I'd hate to be an individual sportsman who has to kind of, you know, go and do that on your own. You're only working with your small team. You know, there's 23, 30 lads all trying to get together. All the coaches are aware. Everybody's on the same message. I do, you know, wonder what people think they're going to get the benefit of questioning, you know, someone like Owen, for example, the criticism that's been laid against him and everything else. And he doesn't become a bad player overnight. And you don't think that how competitive he is, that he isn't trying to put the work in afterwards. So, look, I've got the utmost respect for him. I've been on the other side of it. I've been slated more than anyone, you know, told to retire and go and hang myself and everything else. You know, you just got to stick in there, stick to what you know. But the only thing that what pressure does is squeezes you and actually, unfortunately, makes you play more with inside yourself, because suddenly the perception is that if I do another mistake, the fall from grace is even worse. Whereas actually what these guys need to do is take a deep sigh, go and play what they want to play, be empowered to do it. And if you can control that in that environment and not feel like everyone's got their guns out to shoot you, that'll be the good thing, really. And I think it'll be interesting with the French side again, because there will be people that won't have understood Ben's explanation. There'll be people who won't have read the full article. There'll be people who say in the headlines who will question, you know, like Galtier's behaviour, question this, question that. And this is what with the world we live in professional sport, and it creates a great story, I think, whether some of it's true or not.
Question for all three of you. We had, obviously, had Carter on last week, just in case you hadn't heard. It was a great show, actually. But one of the things that he put in his notebook was that when he did his week's prep, he would always write, you know, X, Y, Z, these are things I've got to focus on, and he'd draw a smiley face. Do the three, or did the three of you, play better when you were smiling in your rugby? And how do you find a smile when all about you is crumbling?
I was exactly going to say that. I was happy smiley until 2007 when I signed in Leicester. They told me to wipe it off my face, you know, and right. Stop wearing those white boots and grow pear, basically. So, no, that was a bit of a culture change, a bit of a culture shock. But there's also, I mean, like Hask said it, there's what people show and how actually they feel inside. I was the one young that really struggled with finding, especially when, I came off the bench, I used to crap myself completely. I really struggle into using that emotion and that stress actually as a fuel of energy rather than just make me crumble from inside. So I would put up a brave smiley face, but inside I was shivering like a leaf. And actually towards the end, I wasn't smiling, but you could tell it's a bit like leadership. You know, it's easy to be a good leader, everything is going good. But when the shit hits the fan, that's when you really, really see how people react. Or it's the same way with the smile. So I wouldn't smile, but when things got really, really tough, that's when I pulled a smile. And that's where you could tell it was a genuine one rather than just a forced sort of feeling.
Okay. Skaz, how do you find, what tricks have you got to find a smile in a World Cup final or Olympics or whatever it might be?
I didn't really have one at the Olympics. That didn't go well.
Yeah, right. In a World Cup final. Let's call it 2014.
No, I'm really joking. I'm definitely a smiler, for sure. We've all been through a lot in this sport, and ultimately it is a sport and it is a game and we put so much into it, yes. But actually there's a lot more out there and there's far more important things as well. Although sometimes we struggle to believe that at times. So I think definitely smiling, and I suppose having a greater appreciation of all the other things going on in the world, and making sure that you do enjoy that one part. I think I'm probably at a point in my career, especially now, where I've definitely got less left than I've had. So just really making sure that I enjoy the moments. I think as well as females, and I might be generalizing, but as females, if we're happier, we play better. That translates onto the field. There's probably only a handful of people that play better when they're grumpy or sad or, you know, motivated that way. So yeah, I think for us it's definitely about creating an environment where people thrive and are happy and are prepared to go out and smile and make mistakes and not worry about it. And I think creating that kind of laissez-faire style environment is a much better one for us.
So you said you didn't speak French. Look at this, straight off the cuff.
Laissez-faire,
enfant cordial. Hoff, I never remember you gurning that much as a player.
No, I wasn't like that. I post a game, or if I'd got yellow carded, which happened more than it should have done, I'd obviously be disappointed coming off the field, and I'd wear my emotions on my sleeve after the game. Before the game, I would always be focused. I think I derived my enjoyment from preparation. So I would take the confidence, my smile, from knowing that I had ticked every box. You know, I'd always divided my life up into manageable chunks, whether that's nutrition, training, core skills, tackling, running, passing. If I ticked all those boxes and done those extras, that's where I derive my confidence from. But one key factor to my happiness and enjoyment was my coaches. And, you know, there are times with England that I had to rely on sports psychologists, music, movies, everything else, family members, partners, to derive that happiness, because it wasn't given in that squad, because the coaches themselves exhibited all the signs of pressure, all the signs of stress. They were in a mood. They were tense. They were snappy. They weren't communicating with the lads. They didn't have a smile on their face. That, in a team environment, just in management and business, filters down. And, you know, the one thing about Eddie Jones's environment is whether he is stressed or he is wearing it, you wouldn't know it. And the boys will be enjoying themselves. And that is the one thing. They will be in that squad, and there'll be frank meetings. There'll be honest meetings. There'll be direct. There'll be people putting their hands up. There'll be people calling. Training will be intense. Training will be niggly. I would have suspected that after that game, the first day is always a bit nervy. Lads trying too hard. But then in the week, he would have made sure they're enjoying themselves. He would have made sure they're smiling. He would have made sure they would have had bonding. The lads would have had the cough machine out. They would have done all this kind of stuff. That's where you get happiness. Going down to the, you know, to recovery and having a laugh and talking shit in the hot tub and having a conversation. And suddenly you feel you're all in it. And you look to your coaches to see how to feel. And now people always say to you, what do you mean see how to feel? Because sometimes you need to know what the tone is. What's the tone? Because we all don't process information the same. So I posted something online about it. People said, you know, don't know how to feel, then you fucking shouldn't be playing. And it's like, no, the point is we all process. You know, some people don't find a loss a massive deal. Some people think they should retire. Some people take the whole burden of the game on their shoulders. Imagine making an error and dropping the ball behind your own line or doing something or missing a kick. You know, that Billy Burns thing when he missed touch and people coming at him online. He knows better than anyone. But if he looks to the coach puts his arm around him, that's great. If the coach then turned around and was like, didn't even talk to him, ignored him, switched his phone off. You know, those understandings. So the cognitive well-being of players in the squad is key. And Eddie Jones will make sure those guys are having a good time. And that for me is really essential in that kind of environment.
I think on that point, I totally agree with you, but I think the landscape at the moment makes that really hard. The social side of stuff and the bit off the field is massively the bit that creates the happy or the smile or not. I can't speak, I've not been in the boys' camp, but certainly in our camp, the social time is right down because of COVID. You have to spend pretty much all your time in your room, that like natural time that you spend with each other, and those jokes come in around the coffee machine, whatever it is just taken away at the moment. And that's really tough. That's really hard. Everyone knows what rugby's like. It thrives off that kind of banter and the social side of stuff. So actually to take that away, you then got new challenges. People can only do so many Zoom quizzes or Zoom whatevers. It becomes incredibly tiresome. So it's actually how you still create that environment when essentially it's been taken away.
So what's your nirvana? How do you escape from the four walls closing in?
To be fair, we've not had a camp longer than 2 days so far. So okay. We've just been in 2 days every week. But beginning of April, we go in for pretty much a month with 2 days off in the middle. So I'll let you know in a few weeks' time. But yeah, I think it's going to be really tough. I think, you know, like our go-to is going out for coffee. You can't go out. Playing cards with each other, you can't socialise. So all of the things that normally are the escapism parts, you'll just be in your room with your laptop, probably caning Netflix.
That's right. Brilliant. That's just,
it's 2020 in a nutshell.
That's a great point. You know, I was talking in the best case scenario about what I did, but you're right. You know, we had Ellis on, and he said that England, out of everybody, is doing it in a much more draconian way and following the letter. Maybe France might now be doing it, but they would, you know, they would do it to letter of the law, where they were only mingling with one person, their roommate, and weren't able to see each other. I just wonder if, you know, that mileage at training, post-training, when people are out doing stuff as a team, because I assume you could, you know, still do stuff as a team, that those moments, you know, fun warm-ups. You know, we had a guy that used to, I still works with him, a guy called David Sylvester, is Tweety his name, and he used to start a warm-up, Tweety says. Now, if you haven't put 30 lads to a version of Simon Says and seen them think it's the greatest game in the history of the world, and all it is a rebranded Simon Says, everyone's like, come on, Tweets. Tweet said. And he's like, no, I can't. And he's like, okay, right, lads. Tweety says, touch his head. And someone gets done, and everyone's like, ah, you dickhead. It's the greatest game. So those little moments, you know, and also Eddie walking around and, you know, giving lads, you know, our post-session, giving lads a bit of stick and getting guys into groups and making them laugh. And, you know, Dylan Hartley's talked about it. You know, during meetings when they do sit down, you know, Eddie walks around the cricket ball. And, like, when Steve Borthwick's trying to talk, Eddie's, like, bouncing off the wall and, like, nudging people and trying to talk to them. And most people in a meeting, you wouldn't do that, but you sort of need to answer your boss, but also show Steve you're concentrating. You kind of want to go, Eddie, can you fuck off, please? He's like, mate, to see that? He goes, look at the state of that bloke's shoes over there. I don't even know what his name is. You're like, Eddie, both. And that, those moments where you have levity, where if the coach is at the back, practicing his forward drives during a meeting. Those moments are what makes it easier. And I think if the coach, I don't know whether you're allowed to have one-on-ones, but I think the management then becomes more about the text messages, comes about maybe we just have a one-on-one Zoom meeting, check in. How are you, mate? How are you? You know, because he's great at doing that. You prioritise the cognitive well-being. So he will have those plans, but that's a great point, Gaz. You should really have your own show.
Thank God she does. Genuine question. Yeah. Does Simon Middleton, so Eddie Jones, obviously, you hear from the players, there's either a bit of love, there's tough love and there's arm around like Hask had. Does Simon Middleton always have total control of his squad, or does he cop quite a lot of flack as well?
Most coaches cop a lot of flack, don't they? Yeah, he always cops a little bit. He's a Northern Rugby League boy, so naturally he's going to get a decent amount. He's quite a direct guy, so you generally know where you stand with him and that sort of stuff. But yeah, you always cop a bit of flack.
What I was going to say then, because just to finish off England-France, the team wearing the smiles come full-time will be...
Come full-time, France, obviously.
Comfortably? Narrowly?
No. Comfortably, no. Honestly, I would love to say that they will get... there's going to be an ass-whipping in Twickenham on Saturday, but that would be not realistic. Like Haas said, if England win, everything will be forgiven. England have gone nowhere, but they've gone from being very, very, very good. So it's not like they're poor all of a sudden. I'm just saying that I don't see them improving and I don't see them being their old self. In one day, if they manage to turn it around, it will be a hell of a game. But don't forget that there's this fire inside the French bellies. Antoine Dupont is back. Listen, at the moment, he can't do anything wrong, can he? And he even beat the shit out of COVID. And he's back. So I think there's going to be a heck of a game. I think there's going to be a France win, but I do not see a comfortable win. I'll say, if you want to, I don't know, pronostic, I'll say 21-18 for France.
A what?
Pronostic.
Prediction.
Prediction.
Pronostic. I love this. We're learning something. We're educating and learning as we go. Your pronostic, please, Emily.
I still have a contract with the RFU, so I'm going
to... France by 30. Good. By one. Is that what we're going with?
I'll be honest with you. Last week, I drank with my friend a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue together. By the end of it, I wasn't sure who I was watching. I mean, I don't know that at the best of times. And I was slumped to my chair and I was like trying to stay off social media, thinking, because you know when you're like, it's a bit steamed up, you think, this is great, I need to share this, the world needs to know my opinion on the referee and everything else. But luckily I managed to keep it, you know, not there. I've made a habit of always backing England, so I will do, purely because I would never want to, I'm a spineless ex-player and I don't want anyone to use it against me. But I think, look, you know, my heart says England, my head says France, but... You know, I've made a career of going with my heart and definitely not paying any attention to what my head says. So, you know, we'll back it now.
You are rugby's amoeba, aren't you? Sort of yeah. Moulding around whatever opinion of the day is. Yeah. Very brave.
I had a moment the weekend where, so I was walking along with one of the lads and we were talking and something happened and I went, actually Chloe was there because she called me. I went, I don't really like this guy. And everyone went, whatever, I like him. I was like, no, I like him. And they were like, no, you haven't had an original thought. Since like 2000, so I have, you know. So, but I'm going to go with them. I'm going to back England.
You're an egg-chasing squid. Wales are going to beat Italy. We don't need to spend too long on that. Imagine if they didn't, though, hey? Forza Italia, but I think Wales will do that one. So Scotland-Ireland is going to be fascinating because Scotland obviously have missed round three. Ireland, signs of life again. Ben, the Celtic clash will result in...
Yeah, tough one. To be honest, I was really impressed with the Irish performance against France. I thought strategically they did really well. They really took all the oxygen out of this French team and it was really smartly done. And I was really impressed by their commitment and stuff. But to be honest, the Scots are on a high. So I would give Scotland winning, but again, a very, very fine margin. I would give a same sort of score, let's just say 22-20.
Okay. Skaz, you don't have a contract with the SRU or the IRFU, so you can give us an opinion.
I'm going to back Scotland. Really like the way that they're trying to play the games. Got some Finn Russell, Stuart Hogg. Really enjoy watching them. So as like a neutral watching that game, I think I'm going to back Scotland.
Okay.
Well, I backed Scotland against Wales, and I got done on that. So I think I'm going to. I think I'm going to back Ireland. I'm not going to back them before anyone thinks I'm going to start cut me or bleed green. That's what Dozza said once, actually. He played under 21s for Ireland, got into a row with somebody, said, cut me or bleed green. I was like, Doz, you're born in High Wycombe, chief. What are you talking about? But this week, cut me or bleed green.
I don't mean to be disrespectful to Italy. I hope they turn up and they do what no one expects them to do, because that would be a hell of a story and it would be brilliant for the tournament. And frankly, they are playing some very good rugby, but I just think Wales, 3 from 3, Grand Slam in sight. They ain't sort of wobbling at the moment, Wales. So let's hope we get 3 good games and pick the best out of that lot, as you like your predictions. I tell you what is quite interesting, actually, Emily, in all seriousness. So Hask is now obviously 14 years retired. So I'm interested in how much time do you cross over with the boys at all? Do you compare notes with Henry Slade, or do you have messages even from Eddie Jones, etc.? Is there a bit of crossover, or is it just on the touchline when you're doing your O2 inside line and Guinness corporate work, hashtag brand ambassador?
Yeah, pretty much, to be honest with you. Obviously, we're on very different schedules at the moment. Obviously, COVID means no one can speak to anyone. In a normal world, we probably don't come across them that much. It's probably, like you say, more at the Adidas gig or the O2 gig or whatever it is, the off-field stuff. And probably at that point, you're not really chatting too much rugby, if I'm honest with you. Probably not how you...
Would you like more of that, though? And I sort of referenced, without wanting to get you in the boiling pot, but I saw that there was a bit of a spat between the men's and the women's cricket team, and I don't know the details about it, but somebody said something, and one of the former England cricketers, female, has come out and said the boys don't do enough for the girls. That's not what I think this is about, and I think there's... From purely watching from the outside, there always seems to be a very good, you know, relationship between the two. But would you like more? Would you benefit, do you think, from comparing notes with Henry Slade or Owen Farrell?
Yeah, I think it would definitely be useful. I think a few of us are trying to, it's probably doing it a bit more locally. So obviously we have a leadership group within England. It's something that has obviously been going for a while, but we all want to upskill ourselves, essentially. So, you know, can I get into Leicester Tigers and see how, when George Ford, Ben Youngs and Borthwick have got their heads together, what they're chatting about and that sort of side of stuff. Like, I genuinely do enjoy all aspects of rugby. So actually to go and sit in and listen to that totally different environment, as we were speaking about earlier, I'm absolutely no idea, no preconceptions as to what happens in a male premiership rugby club. So that would be really interesting. And actually then what we can take out of that and learn from. But yeah, certainly I think there's a million and one things that we could learn from the boys. And hopefully that they would want to learn some stuff from us as well, because it is a different world. We probably come at things from a slightly different angle and have a different perspective on things.
Are you a rugby nose?
I like a low-key one.
I can't
quote dates, scores, times.
But like, do you love the intricacies and the detail?
Yeah, I do. I'm quite a detailed person, but in a relaxed manner. Like, I'm not going to get hung up on stuff.
Okay.
If that's a combination.
Yeah, no, that's a good combination. I just asked that because I'm fascinated you. Because am I right in saying you went to the US on a basketball scholarship?
No, I was offered one. So I used to play a lot of basketball as a kid. My club went on tour to America for like 3 weeks when I was like 15, 16, unreal. And then
Where did you go?
So we did like the East Coast, so New York, Philly, Washington, Baltimore.
That's quite cool.
Yeah, it was real cool.
I've never toured there.
It was cool. And then we played in some tournaments, and then I got a letter in the mail, this big kind of prospectus type thing, just saying, asking if I'd want to be interested in going over there. It's been deemed as like being offered a scholarship. It was a lot looser than that.
Let's not let the truth get in the way of a very good story. You were on your way to the WNBA from all accounts. Where had they stuck the pin in the map? I mean, where would you have ended up if you'd taken it or gone for it or committed to it?
It was, oh my God, I can't remember the name of the place now. I think it was somewhere on the East Coast, New York, an outskirts of New York somewhere, yeah.
Why did you not do it? It was amazing. Why did you not do it?
I don't think I ever really took it that seriously. I can't remember how old I was. I was no more than 16, certainly. And yeah, I suppose it's quite a big, daunting prospect. I hadn't even learnt to drive yet. So the thought of moving, well, I could drive because I grew up on a farm, but I hadn't physically, I wasn't on the road. Yeah, the thought of moving the other side of the world was probably a farm girl, that was a big deal.
Yeah, I think in the US you can drive at 15, kind of. I had a mate who lived in Washington and he went and did his driving test at 15 and the instructor fell asleep. So he drove around for 25 minutes and parked and the bloke went, well done, you've passed. And that was it. I don't know where the hell he's ended up now, but yeah, you could have taken America by storm. But the reason I asked that about the sort of the basketball is I'm fascinated in you as a... We asked Kieran Reid the other day, he was head boy, and Carter wasn't head boy, but was the prom king. What were you like as a student?
Well, I went to a very normal state school, so I didn't even know what a head girl was until I watched some TV programmes, I don't think. But I was a decent student. Like, I got on with my work, I did my homework, all that sort of stuff. Like, I'd hope none of my teachers would now pick me out as the troublemaker. Yeah, I'd say I knuckled down, but sport was always my thing. I'd always rather wait, you know, much prefer being outside than inside doing my homework. Obviously, rugby started kicking off quite quickly for me during my A-level years. I probably spent a bit more time on the rugby than I did on my A-levels. I mean, I still got through and I got decent grades, but I could have got better grades. Obviously, I went through uni. 2010 World Cup fell during my dissertation. So I managed to manage it. And I think, if I'm honest, I think that's really helped. I think having to do that and manage those things, organise yourself, put things in time order and whatnot, I think it's definitely helped now in terms of the rest of my life, because I've not just sailed through being a professional rugby player the whole time. I have a bit of perspective on the world as well, although only a small one.
What was the dissertation on?
It was on supplementation in rugby union players or something. I used the pool that I knew I had. So, like, drove to camp one day, threw my questionnaires out to all the girls. They filled them in. Bosh, done.
I tell you, that's quite a good sample pool, though. I mean, if you're going to do a dissertation, you might as well do it at the elite level of sport. Yeah. I was on the double portraiture of David Hockney. So we'll swap at some point and you can have a really good yarn with that. It's really interesting, though, because, I mean, you talk about the journey that you've been on with the game. Do you look back now with that and just think, this is what I was born to do and it's what I've always thought I'd do? Or do you look back and think, Jesus, it's been a hell of... I mean, there's still chapters to write, of course, but you look back and think, Jesus, it's been good fun kind of thing. And I'm almost surprised with where the game has taken me.
Yeah, it's definitely been good fun. And it was never something that I wanted to do and never a goal I'd set myself. And if I'm honest, I think that's probably been the best thing. You know, yeah. I wasn't stressed out because I was having to work my way towards something that I'd set from a really young age. At 10 years old, I had no idea what I wanted to be. Even at 16 years old, I still had no idea that I wanted to play rugby for England. So I just went on the journey. I embraced every opportunity that I had, loved playing the game, obviously kept being able to go along and progress England as 20s, A's, whatever it was, and got capped really early. But I never set myself a challenge of, I want to go and be the best player in the world. It was just a case of, I want to go and give the best showing of myself every time I can. And I think that's helped with, you know, we say pressure sometimes is good for people, sometimes it's not. I tried not to put that too much on myself, and I think it's been a good thing.
Yeah, it's been wonderful watching the smile that you always play with. Hask, you were always someone who wanted it so desperately. I mean, I remember interviewing you when you were 16 and you were 6'4" and 42 stone at that point. I just look back, I sort of listen to Emily and the enjoyment that she's got about the career that's unfolded. We've spoken in the past, I just never really asked you whether you enjoyed achieving what it was you set out to achieve, as it were, or whether it was always therefore just almost like a job.
I'll be honest with you, because I initially never wanted to be a rugby player. It was only because I kind of got...
I thought you always wanted to be a rugby player.
No.
What do you want to be?
I wanted to be the SAS.
Yes, you have said that, actually.
Genuinely. Yeah. I didn't... I sort of never had that, you know. I mean, it's interesting now because, you know, I've obviously had a career and I give people advice on mindset and different things. But I wondered if I didn't have rugby, what the hell would I do? Because I decided to try to read history at like Exeter and like got in and like deferred my university entry for 1 year to have a go with WASP. And sort of 19 years later, I'm still doing it, or 18, 19 seasons later, I'm still doing it. And obviously I upskilled myself along the way, but never with a degree. You know, I'm always admire people who manage to balance that both. I think because I was driven by sort of confidence stuff in terms of lack of confidence in myself, I enjoyed it. I loved the journey. I relished it because I always made the most of it. Did I always enjoy it? Not as much as I should have done, because it was always the desire to get better, to kind of banish those demons, to achieve things, because I felt maybe not, because I had the personality I had. It was always an uphill struggle, you know what I mean? It didn't always come easy, you know, because I think if you were sort of quieter and sort of shyer and perceived as more humble, perhaps it would have been an easier ride. But I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it because I always made the most of it. I just, you know, the only thing I ever said when in retirement was that did I celebrate the little victories, you know, and enjoy as much of it and look back and credit myself. You know, for example, this is a plug, but it has a purpose. My first music track came out this week and it got played on Kiss FM on Friday night and Saturday night. And Chloe and I opened a bottle of champagne and I was dancing around the house because, you know, Majestic, the DJ, played it. And for me, that was a massive moment for me. I became a producer, became a DJ and producer, and nobody can take that away. And I enjoyed my first England cap. When I ran out, I smiled. But then once you're doing something like that, then becomes the judgment, the pressure you put on yourself, and that can tarnish it. And that's the one thing I try to do now is even any little win, finishing a course, doing something is something I celebrate. But I always did it with a smile on my face. I just questioned myself a lot, which is a bit of a regret I have.
Well done on your very exciting week. Ben, to go back to the original question, which is about, I suppose, the sense of satisfaction. Are you satisfied looking back at your career now because you surprised yourself or because you hit the marks you set for yourself?
I never hit any marks, to be honest. I never set any goals straight in my head. I think it's precisely what Emily said. It's the whole idea of trying to be the best every single time. And that's really what it was. I think it all goes down of how you're brought up, where you're brought up. So I was born in Paris, where rugby was absolutely nothing. My parents didn't really care about rugby. We never spoke about rugby. So I guess when I started, it's because I was a big fella and I could do some damage. So they just took me on, you know, and I played all different sports before. And then you just try to be the best. I always had that competitive drive in me to say, right, I just need to find an avenue that clicks for me. And I loved basketball, but honestly, I was missing, well, quite a lot of height. And I mean, I played every single sport that was, you know, you could imagine. And so basically when I got to rugby, I liked the values. I liked the brotherhood. I liked the whole environment. I liked the vibe about the whole place. And I was good at it. Then I just tried to have a big smile, not a big smile on face, but enjoy as much as I could because this was my happy time. But then things get competitive. So it's more that competitive sort of grit to me that really spoke out during my career. I wanted to be the best. I wanted to reach for the French team. Once you're in the French team, you don't want to be on the bench. You want to start, you know, and then you want to be in the best club possible. But funnily enough, my best rugby years were the ones towards the end of my career where I actually stopped thinking of my goals, but our goals. And the best example is I'm the guy who lost the most European finals in the world. And I was starting to get really upset about it. And really, it would really haunt me quite a little bit. And then I can't remember who actually told me, but are you sad for us or are you sad for you? And genuinely, I felt in my heart that I was allowed to be sadder than all the other members of the team. No. There's no such thing, right? It's one team, one year, one special competition. We were all absolutely the same. So it's not because you've played one, you've played 10, and it was with different clubs. So, you know, you can't just justify the fact that I was allowed to be sadder. And actually, once I let that go, and I was more concentrated on the common goal of let's go and win this stuff. And I was actually super happy for the rest of the boys when we won the Challenge Cup. And the boys in return were super happy for me in particularly, you know, if that makes sense. Mm. So celebrating those wins 100%. I didn't put myself any particular goals, but I wanted to do my absolute best and to compete every time.
All three of you have lived the dream at various points. You're very, very lucky to have done the things that you've done, but only one of you's got a World Cup winner's medal. So I've got three quick questions to finish with, Emily. The try, 2014, how often do you think about it?
Genuinely not very often. Obviously, it comes up a lot. I promise you. So it was a penalty. Katie looked at me. I said, no, I don't fancy kicking it. It's a bit far out. So we went to the corner and we were still having a conversation around what move we thought we should do or, you know, having a conversation about it. And the line out had happened and the ball was coming. So it looks like this really like training ground, pre-planned, let's hit Skaz in the middle, Burf will go out the back, da 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 da. It's not. It's, holy shit, the ball's here. Hit someone and then it just opened up. So I'm sorry to like not make it a particularly exciting story, but it just was one of those things that just worked out.
I love it even more that it's just done with a bit of a shrug and that sort of nonchalant way that you do things. That is brilliant. Absolutely love that. So that obviously is one. Was it a life-changing moment? I mean, when you look back now, would you define that as life-changing?
I don't know about life-changing. I'd say like career-changing. I don't know how you differentiate the two, but yeah, it was definitely a big moment in my Emily Scarrett, the rugby player.
Yeah.
I bet those people who could tell you about not winning a World Cup would call it life-changing if they could have won it. The second one I want to ask you about, though, is, and I don't know if it's life-changing or not, but central contracts. Was that 2018?
Yeah, so I actually got my first one after 2014 with Sevens. Yeah. But 15s was, 2018, I think.
I suppose for rugby to have gone at that point, I know you obviously had it with the Sevens, but for rugby across the women's spectrum to go from being a hobby and a passion into a career. I know the word trailblazer gets overused, but I just wonder when you reflect now at having been there at the point at which that trigger was pulled, I mean, how proud are you to have been part of just a seismic change in the sport?
Yeah, super proud. I think once I started playing for England and, had been capped and was well on the journey, I still never believed that I'd be able to do it as a profession. So I think to be amongst that first crop that have been able to is very proud. And I think one of the biggest things now is that young girls and stuff can aspire to be a professional rugby player. I think that's really cool. Like, it's something that I never thought of, never dreamed of, because it wasn't a thing, whereas now people can do that. And I think that's kind of cool.
I love it. Queen of understatement. And the last thing I want to ask you about is, I'm going to read this out, Rob Kitson, and this sort of, when I read this out, it sort of makes me even more excited for your show, really. Rob Kitson wrote to you in The Guardian, I should say, if you were to conduct a dressing room poll of the most multi-talented current England players, it would probably be Scarrett first, with Maro Itoje and Owen Farrell straining to make the podium. Scores the tries, kicks the goals, captain the team in your 90th test and still turn up at your club 48 hours later, ready to give more of yourself, ? If she were male, Scarrett would be being discussed in the hushed tones once reserved for Johnny Wilkinson.
Is that a question, Alex?
No, it's not. It's not a question. I just wanted to see whether it was the winced smile or the genuine smile, and you tried quite hard not to smile, and then it fell out. So I just wanted to see your reaction, first of all. And then the question is, does that resonate with you?
That sounds big. I don't know.
I'll rephrase it. For the girl who went to try her luck at, playing basketball and grew up on a farm and was sort of catapulted into the game, when you hear really esteemed rugby journalists writing of you in those terms, you feel what? Try not to smile again.
Don't know, a bit almost like shy, I suppose. I don't know, like massively humbled and I guess proud. Yeah, a little bit shy at the same time. It's definitely not something I set out to do. It's definitely not something I ever thought would happen, but I suppose I'm proud of where I've got to and I guess how I've got here as well. And I guess people wanting to write nice things like that is definitely the way I would have wanted to have done it.
Hask, how much would you pay Rob Kitson to write something like that about you?
Oi, not even my parents or my wife would write something as nice about me as that. I will argue though, if you're going to put multi-talented, the men think DJ, podcaster, author, MMA,
it's within the sphere of
right.
The main event of your life.
Say potato. I genuinely think with Emily, I'm lucky to know her for a number of years, actually. I think, I don't know how old you were when I interviewed you for my YouTube show, years and years and years ago. It's still actually on my channel. And, to follow her journey to become, one of the best players in the, what are you laughing at? Why?
I was going to say you've come a long way, Emily, but you're not. You're back on Hask's bloody YouTube channel. We're trying to help you grow into an esteemed spokeswoman for the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I was either ahead of my time. That's what I'm going to put it. I was ahead of my time picking out talent. I think it's interesting. I think we talked about on the podcast about the women's game is here and it's buzzing. Rugby is a smaller sport than people believe it is, especially those in rugby, and women's rugby is ever present. But to have someone of her talent is exceptional, and she thoroughly deserves it. To be talked about in those tone, those ways is fully deserved, and it's amazing. And I just think it's one of those things where you take it for granted. I take it for granted because I've known you, but it's nice to be, to see it in black and white and to understand the level that you've reached and what more you've got to give, especially with your show. And also, you do it in such a nice way as well. I know plenty of players that have lots of talent who could have reached it, but they're absolute nightmares. But you're a great person there to talk to, and I'm looking forward to the the good, what's it called?
Fuck's sake.
Sorry.
Do you know what our show is called, out of interest? We've only done 44 episodes.
It should be called Haskell and Friends, is what it should be called.
It's called Hask and Four Flat Tyres, I think.
Yeah. The good, the Scars and the Rugby. Sorry, I just couldn't work out. Yeah, the good, yeah. Whatever, it's going to be great.
We are perpetually sweeping up after you. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Good. Shall we leave it there? I think we've embarrassed you enough, haven't we? Do you feel you've got away with it? How's it been?
It's been all right. It's been all right. First introduction. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm good.
I'm so glad you've got your own show, because you can make of it what you want. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we're watching quite enviously, Tins and I, about the fact you're talking sense about rugby, and we're playing in Kids Corner with Hask and his Tonka trucks.
How do I get slated on all these things?
Because you love it. That's why.
I will say, though, because you've got Tindall's on there as well, one thing you're going to be introduced to that Mike, that he doesn't admit, is the unbelievable heavy breathing, which when you're trying to make an answer, you're just going to hear... and you'll be like, and honestly, you'll hear it, and you're and like, it's like that time that I almost had that stroke live on TV with the talk back on Sky, trying to give an answer.
We've all been there and done that. Yeah.
Yeah. With Darth Vader in your ear. Good luck with that. But he knows his rugby, and Christ, he loves it as well. He loves it. I'll take it or leave it. He loves it.
Right. Anything exciting this week, Scaz? What's in the diary? Are you back on the paddock tomorrow?
Yeah, camp tomorrow, Wednesday. Recording Wednesday night.
Good, good.
And then, yeah, just a chill weekend, hopefully.
And are you going to get, I mean, not are you, how much abuse are you going to get from Nolly from the tryhards and from Berth from the Women's Rugby Pod? Have you still got their numbers, or are they old and retired now and past it?
No, not at all, but a lot, I think. I'll be getting a lot. Right. I've actually put my phone on airplane mode to do this, so when I turn it back on, I'm not sure what will come through. But to be fair, the girls are all really supportive as well. It's good to get behind one another, but yeah, there'll be a barrage, I'm sure.
Good. It's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it. Ben? Kids are out studying. What's going on in your world?
Yeah, kids back at school, but Oxford online. So about 700 hours of Zoom for this week.
Oh, my God. Almighty.
Yeah. Enjoy. It's almost over.
Yeah, enjoy. And Hoff, more music, more colouring in. What's happening?
I'm actually not sure. I was trying to think around some witty riposte and look around and see what's doing. I was like, I don't know what's happening this week. I tell you what, though. There's series two of What the Plank of the Podcast, and I got to interview Carl Cox and Jimmy Carr last week, and I've got some more exciting people next week, and I managed to keep together without fanboying over Carl Cox, who is the nicest man in the history of the world, and has made me realise that I'm not successful in his remit, but you know, manners and being nice cost nothing, so I'm just nice to everybody now.
Well done, Carl Cox. Bizarrely, Carl Cox's kids go to school very near here, and I told you this, he's often seen at the sort of the school fete, you know, working out behind the Pimm's tent and the donut bar, which is quite sort of incongruous for those who grew up on Carl Cox. You also done Warren Gatland as well. Any little snippets?
Oh, I did. Well, I tell you what, though, because I love Warren, right? But the body language went from this, starting the podcast, very defensive for those who know body language, too, by the end of it, to very relaxed. Because I think he thought, you know, he keeps a great media presence and he's very succinct and everything else like that. Would I have brought him down to my level? But actually, no, we were very good, very interesting. No revelations about the Lions. I decided not to push him on that. But no, mate, other than that, quite a quiet week, just usual training, trying to keep Chloe happy and podcasting working and DJing.
Well done, team. I've really enjoyed that. The Good, the Bad and the Rugby will be back next week for our usual shambolic trot around whatever it is that we do, but you should really be doing this trail yourself, but I'm going to do it because you won't. The Good, the Scaz and the Rugby is out on Thursday. Don't miss it. It promises to be a lot of fun. It's entirely Emily's thing. It's going to be so much more highbrow and entertaining than any of the crap that we do. I'm really excited for you. Go get it and have a lot of fun with Elma and Tins, who's going to join you in week one. We'll find some better guests for you moving forwards. We've also got our Premiership preview show on Friday as well. We've got 5 out of 6 last weekend. Bath have kiboshed the last 5 rounds for me. So I'm never backing them again. But we are getting warmer for those of you who like our preview show. We have also got, and lo and behold, we are getting there, our first GBNR Clay Pigeon Shooting Day on the 24th of June. You're quite excited about that, Hoff, aren't you?
Very much so. Love it. I've got the full wardrobe. I'll be tweeted out of my brain, ready to take everyone down. And also, I want to have a go because Tins, you know, because he's a country bumpkin and shoots on estates, I really want to put him back in his box.
Hang on, Skaz, you grew up on a farm. You've got a little pair of Purdies.
Do I get an invite?
Yeah, do you want to come to that?
Absolutely.
Wait, right, 24th of June.
We're not paying you to be there, but you can come along for fun. Okay, only if you dress as a farmer with a bit of straw in your mouth. All right, you like to shoot birds?
Naturally.
Right. Naturally. Good. Right, Skaz and Ben are in for that as well. We're doing it with the Do Club. It's at the West Wickham Estate. It's 30 minutes out of London. Apparently, we've actually sold quite a few of the teams already. But if you do fancy coming along for what should be a really good day out, 3 days after all these restrictions are lifted, I should say. So it should be a lot of fun. We've got squads of four, a cracking lunch, and we'll chat a bit of rubbish afterwards ahead of the Lions tour, which starts 2 days later. If you want to get involved, email events@goodbadrugby.com. We'll hopefully see you for that on the 24th of June. God, it'll be nice to be out and playing again. Don't forget to check out the website, goodbadrugby.com, for the Norse's stats. It's also where you can get our GBNR merch. Skaz, we need a T-shirt for you quite soon as well, or a hoodie of some sort. So get going with your mottos. We've got Butter Nutter for Ben and Don't Haskell the Hoff coming. All this to be revealed. I don't want to reveal too much. We've got some quite good merch coming a little bit later. Thanks again for listening. Thank you for watching. We'll be back next week with yet another fantastic guest, a multiple Heineken Cup winner, a British and Irish Lion, and one of Ireland's greatest ever try scorers. Hold on tight for that one. Skaz, well done. Absolute Thank treat you. To have you on board. Good luck with the show when it launches. See you in 7 days' time. Take it away, Rob Brydon. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.